Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Dave Bray, America's favorite patriotic rocker, and you are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Network.
Let me get a unit to FDR on 112. Shots fired.
One of the most important differences between the left and the right is how each regards the role and the size of the government. The left believes that the state should be the most powerful force in society. Among many other things, the government should be in control of educating every child, should provide all health care, and should regulate often to the minutest detail how businesses conduct their business. In Germany, for instance, the government legislates the time of day stores have to close. In short, there should ideally be no power that competes with government. Not parents, not businesses, not private schools, not religious institutions, not even the individual human conscience. Conservatives, on the other hand, believe the government's role in society should be limited to absolute necessities, such as national defense, and to being the resource of last resort to help citizens who cannot be helped by family, by community, or by religious and secular charities. Conservatives understand that as governments grow in size and power, the following will inevitably happen. One, there will be ever-increasing amounts of corruption. Power and money breed corruption. People in government will sell government influence for personal and political gain, and people outside government will seek to buy influence and favors. In Africa and Latin America, government corruption has been the single biggest factor holding nations back from progressing. Two, individual liberty will decline. With a few exceptions, such as an unrestricted right to abortion, individual liberty is less important to the left than to the right. This is neither an opinion nor a criticism. It is simple logic. The more control the government has over people's lives, the less liberty people have. Three, countries with ever-expanding governments will either reduce the size of their government or eventually collapse economically. Every welfare state ultimately becomes a Ponzi scheme, relying on new payers to pay previous payers. And when it runs out of the new payers, the scheme collapses. All the welfare states of the world, including wealthy European countries, are already experiencing this problem to varying degrees. Four, in order to pay for an ever-expanding government, taxes are constantly increased. But at a given level of taxation, the society's wealth producers will either stop working, work less, hire fewer people, or move their business out of the state or out of the country. Five, big government produces big deficits and ever-increasing and ultimately unsustainable debt. This, too, is only logical. The more money the state hands out, the more money people will demand from the state. No recipient of free money has ever said, "Thank you, I have enough." Unless big governments get smaller, they will all eventually collapse under their own weight, with terrible consequences socially as well as economically. Six, the bigger the government, the greater the opportunities for doing great evil. The 20th century was the most murderous century in recorded history. And who did all this killing? Big governments. Evil individuals without power can do only so much harm. But when evil individuals take control of a big government, the amount of harm they can do is essentially unlimited. The right fears big government. The left fears big business. But Coca-Cola can't break into your house or confiscate your wealth. Only big government can do that. As irresponsible as any big business has ever been, it is only big government that can build concentration camps and commit genocide. Seven, big government eats away at the moral character of a nation. People no longer take care of other people. After all, they know the government will do that. That's why Americans give far more of their money and volunteer far more of their time to charity than do Europeans at the same economic level. Without the belief in an ever-expanding government, there is no left. Without a belief in limited government, there is no right. I'm Dennis Prager. To subscribe to our YouTube channel, click here. To help keep our videos free, donate here.
it's a positive, elim. Mine it's a negative, latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In-Between. You got to spread joy up to the maximum. Bring gloom down to the minimum. Have faith or pandemonium, liable to walk upon the sea.
To illustrate his last remark, Jonah in the whale, Noah in the ark. What did they do just when everything looked so dark?
Man, they said we better accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In-Between. No, do not mess with Mr. In-Between. Do you hear me?
Chillin' and you will hear about the eliminating of the negative and an accent on a positive.
Gather round the children if you're willing and sit tight while I start reviewing the attitude of doing right.
You gotta accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between.
Got to spread joy
up to the maximum.
Bring gloom
down
to the minimum.
Otherwise,
liable to walk upon the sea.
To illustrate,
well, illustrate
my last remark.
You got the law.
Jonah
in the whale, Noah in the ark.
What did they say?
What did they say?
Say when everything looks so dark. Man, they say we better the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between. No, don't mess with Mr. In Between.
trumpet man from all Chicago way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was the top man at his craft. But then his number came up and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now, a blowing reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B. They made him blow a bugle for his Uncle Sam. It really brought him down because he couldn't jam. The captain seemed to understand. Because the next day the cap went out and drafted a band. And now the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's the boogie-woogie bugle boy of Company B. Every night, and wakes them up the same way in the early bright. They clap their hands and stamp their feet, because they know how he plays when someone gives him a beat. He really breaks it up when he plays reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B.
Well, don't pay the ransom. I escape. Was able to kill the guard and get out of there. Here's Bob here with the apologizing profusely for the troubles. It happens sometimes. That's radio for you. Thank you for putting up with it and hanging in there. This is a conservative's perspective. This is barely the Thursday night live edition of a conservative's perspective. It is scheduled to start Thursday evening, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and that's what we tried to do this evening. But it didn't work that way, and I am now being told that I have to stay in class, so instead of doing an hour show, I've got to do a 90-minute show. But you know what? That's cool, because we've got a lot of crap to talk about, as we always do. About 3 days ago, I can't even remember what I was looking at. It might have been Drudge. It's hard to say where it was. But at any rate, it was, and I didn't go to the article. Yes, Lisa, we will make up for lost time. You bet we will. Okay, anyway, like I was talking about, and it was just a picture and a headline. That's why I'm thinking it was probably Breitbart or something like that. And it talked about how Rachel Maddow's popularity was soaring in the cable news network demographic division, whatever you want to call it. And then if you've been keeping up, I think it may have even been that day. It might have been like Monday or Tuesday. She pulled this on a Tuesday or Wednesday. But she had this thing on Twitter, very cryptic, very, very huge, breaking. We've got Trump tax returns tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern time. MSNBC. Quote, seriously. So this was, I guess maybe the 13th, so maybe Monday they did this. So they have these tax returns, and they're ballyhooing this thing. They're making it into this huge deal. And it was going to be proof positive of something. Not what they expected. Not what they expected by a long shot. So she goes through this, and it was really, somebody made the comparison earlier. I can't remember who it was. Somebody I was listening to, some talk show guy, about this, what Rachel Maddow did with these Donald Trump tax returns. And those of you who can remember the legendary TV special with Geraldo Rivera concerning Al Capone's vaults. Underneath some swanky hotel, Capone was supposed to have a piece of the action in back during the day, and this vault was allegedly to have been sealed up since Capone's time. No idea what was going to be back in there. So they come up with this TV show. We're going to break into this vault. We're going to do it on live television, and we're going to have Geraldo Rivera anchor it, and it's going to be huge. It's going to be so big. And it was a fizzle. It was nothing. They opened up the vault doors, and there was some dirt and empty bottles. That was it. Nothing. And this is about the same thing. So she whips out these tax returns. Well, she goes through an entire segment with this long, wheezy, meandering opening monologue, I guess you can call it, this preamble to what she's gonna whip out on people, and then she whips it out. And what it turns out, it was just two pages, a copy. It wasn't the entire return, but it was a copy, part of a copy, of a tax return from 12 years ago, from 2005. So they're already 12 years old. And then they've already been released. They were released by the White House. And the Wall Street Journal had already reported on this particular year's tax return, the 2005 tax return, a year ago. So unless you're like, I don't know, a seasonal assistant for H&R Block, this is not news. But she sure threw it out there like it was news, and it was really ballyhooed, and everybody was talking all kinds of craziness about it. But what it showed in the end result, if we're going to look at really what happened, what it showed is not only did, yes, Donald Trump paid his taxes, it also showed that not only did he pay his taxes, he paid more taxes. He paid a higher percentage of taxes than the people who Rachel Maddow worked for, MSNBC, the gigantic telecommunications corporation. They paid at 24%. He paid 25%. The president of the United States, Barack Hussein Obama Jr., the third, limited patent pending, Barack Obama paid at an 18% tax rate, and Bernie Sanders, 13% tax rate. He paid $38 million in taxes on revenue of $150 million. Hillary Clinton said the reason he wouldn't release his tax returns is because then we would absolutely, positively, definitely, no kiddingly, I ain't playing with youingly, know for sure that Donald Trump never, ever paid one red cent of income tax in his entire corrupt, cheap building, tourist trap baiting life. So nobody's going to remember too much about that because they're all going to be caught up in the Rachel Maddow thing, and now she's looking like a stooge. But, yeah, you guys remember during the debates when Hillary said, you know, he didn't pay his taxes. You think I'm a crook? Well, I am a crook. But look over here at Donald Trump. Now, that's a crook. Wrong. And it wouldn't, in a way, it wouldn't surprise me if we didn't find out. Now, these were given to her. They were given to Rachel Maddow. The copy of these returns were given to Rachel Maddow from some no-name journalist who claimed he found them in his mailbox mysteriously. A couple of dudes looked a lot like Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones wearing black suits, dropped them off, and then give him a shot with the ink pen of forgetfulness and move on. But it claimed that he got them, so he didn't know what to do with them, and being a good boy, he turned them over to a grown-up. He gave them to Rachel Maddow, and Maddow did all this mess, and everybody already knew this. And so she's looking like a dope today. She's looking like a dope with good cause. And, you know, and it just goes back. I was trying to think earlier today or yesterday when I was creating the show. I was trying to think of I'm typing the producer. you know, I always try to come up with some kind of little teaser tagline when we create the show and post it at the various outlets that we do. And I thought, well, what have you been talking about? And if you stop and think about it, in its various forms and in its many, 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 many facets, and all its multiple creepy, weedy layers, basically what we've done from the get-go is talk about what? The fundamental difference. This show is about a conservative's perspective. That's the way we look at things. Because that's what we are. At our core, we're conservative. Not just myself, you know, the folks that are listening to the show, the center, right, the right, the conservatives, all those people, you know, we're moving in that same direction. But so what we do is we look at the differences between ourselves and the left. And, you know, here lately, in the last couple of months, I've come to include Lisa, if we're still sounding okay, just send me a little thumbs up or something somewhere along the line here. But anyway, you know, and even the classic liberal, the John F. Kennedy Democrat, the John F. Kennedy liberal, that kind of liberal is, okay, thank you, is on our side now. What we're seeing with people like Thomas Perez and Keith Ellison in charge of the Democrat National Committee, that's the hard left. They're making them look like moderates, and these guys are making noises about the middle class and blah, 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 yakety schmackety. It's the hard left, guys. We've talked about these dudes. Some of you probably think, well, since they're in these positions of huge authority, maybe they'll temper their attitude. No, they're not going to temper anything. Tempering their attitude is not what got them to the chairmanship. And then the guy turns around and creates a role, deputy chairman, for Keith Ellison. Acting like one guy's some wild radical and the other dude's this well-grounded moderate. No, there's hardly any daylight at all between those two guys. That's why Perez created that position for Keith Ellison X, so they can rule the galactic empire as brothers or stepbrothers or bros or what. Anyway, that's what's going on there. But they are so blind. And that's what we talk about. We talk about these differences between the hard left and the rest of us. This is a great example. This is a terrific example. They are so desperate. And it wouldn't surprise me if it was Trump's people somewhere along the line that was trolling this poor, empty-headed girl. This poor, empty-headed, confused girl. I know, she's got a PhD, she's this, she's that, but Seriously? Do you see what, I mean, do you see how, and his, here's what's even worse and even more cynical, is if she knew that this was a dud ahead of time, but went ahead and sold it as something piping hot and scandalously fresh. You see what I mean? But I don't think that's the case. That would call for, I believe, honestly and truly, a level of cleverness that Maddow and her minions are simply not possessed of. But it would not surprise me. And I'm not saying that he's involved in any way, shape, or form. It's just idle speculation. It's just me looking over the game table at a bunch of people playing Clue. That's all I'm doing. I'm just speculating. I'm just kibitzing. Armchair president, armchair anchorman. And that's what I think, is that it would not surprise me. And then he's sitting and he's laughing up his sleeve at the whole thing, because if anybody has played the press throughout this entire election cycle on either side, it's definitely been Donald Trump. And he has played the press like a Stradivarius violin. I almost said fiddle. You could tell him from which he almost played that. He almost played that press people like a Stradivarius fiddle. That's almost what came out. Anyway, you know, and he has. And how has he played them? Well, he's played them in the most creative way possible. He has just, he's just circumvented them. He's just sidestepped them. Back during the Second World War, the Japanese were all over all these little islands that dotted the Pacific. And we needed a pathway from Hawaii, from the United States to Hawaii, through the Pacific Islands to Japan. Because that was the ultimate step. We're gonna take the war to Japan, one way or another. And in some of those islands, we would send in the Marines, we would take them. We'd have to kill a lot of Japanese. A lot of Japanese, because those cats are just, you know, they're like ISIS. They never surrender. You got to kill them. That's all there is to it. It's not your fault. Don't feel bad about it. These guys started it, and they're insisting on us killing them. And if we don't kill them, they're going to overrun everything that we hold dear. So what choice do we have? Well, we don't have a choice. That's right, son. Here, take this BAR and go kill those blankety blank blanks. And that's what they did. But in other islands, where it wasn't deemed of military importance, they just bypassed them. And they were left there to starve, to wither on the vine, so to speak. And that's what Donald Trump has done, because they couldn't get supplies once the Allied military forces had moved beyond these islands closer to the Japanese home islands. Well, then you have the Navy presence in there and submarines and air patrols. It's going to be very difficult, if not impossible, to resupply these guys. So you starve them out. They surrender, or they die, or a combination of both. And that's usually what it takes. And that's what Donald Trump has done with a large part of the press. They're upset because he's changed the seating order and who he calls on for questions in the press room. They're going crazy over that. They don't like the idea of his Twitter account and him using Twitter as actively and as effectively. For a guy like Donald Trump, Twitter is a tool. For a guy like Barack Obama, Twitter was a narcissistic, self-indulgent toy. You see what I mean? You see the difference? Exactly. Exactly. For Donald Trump, it is a tool. It is, and it's an effective tool, because he's using it to counter CNN, MSNBC, CBS, ABC, NBC, Fox, the whole gang, man. I'm just not even going to, you know, I'm getting to the point where I don't even exclude Fox anymore or give them an honorable mention or anything, and that's okay. There are a lot of good people at Fox News. Chris Steigerwalt is one of them. John Gibson is another one. Hannity, he's been swinging for the bleachers since day one. And there are some people there. But by and large, you know, it's package, it's product. And as long as we stay poor and penniless around here, I guarantee you're going to get a better show out of me than you are out of those cats. And the same thing for Mark Hoffman and Gonzalo Duran and Patrick Miller and the other hosts that we have here on Patriot Nation Radio here during the week, the live stuff that we do on Blog Talk. But he circumvents the press through the Twitter account, and he takes his message, he takes his opinions, he takes his perspective, shall we say, directly to the American people. And there are a lot of people, I mean a lot, not dummies, not fake, phony, imitation Twitter people, real live human beings, just like you and I, paying attention to what Donald Trump says. And we know that this is a good way to hear from him. Why? Well, because we don't trust ABC, CNN, MSNBC, Headline News, Fox. We don't trust them. And I don't have to get into why we don't trust them. You know we don't trust them. But the thing is, in the aftermath of all this, the hoopla and the red face and the egg and all that on Rachel Maddow, what it really shows more than anything else is just like everybody else on the left, just like Brian Matthews. Remember Brian Matthews? Yeah, lied about there. There I was as we moved along the shore in the first wave of Allied troops storming Utah Beach in June 6, 1941. I remember standing on the balustrade of the Hindenburg as somebody looked at me and said, "Do you smell something burning?" It just so you've got Brian Matthews, you've got Rather, was it Dan Rather that had the ponied up thing on George W. Bush with that fake military document? There was just all these different examples. Al Sharpton, oh my God. All right, Al Sharpton, all the stuff that these people, they're shameless. There's a moment. They're, I don't know what it's like for them privately or whatever, but they're making so much money, and they believe this. They've gotten to a point where they're so huge they believe their own crap. They believe their own crap, and they don't see anything wrong with this constantly moving, constantly shifting set of rules and morality and what's acceptable and what is not and what's justifiable and what is not that they operate from. Again, and that's a prime example, what we see here, because she's not going to get too excited about this. She's going to halfway try to defend it, just like they always halfway try to defend it. And then they're just going to move on like it didn't happen. They're going to shuffle their papers on their desk, and they're going to stare off into the distance on camera 3. And they're going to act like none of this ever happened, or it happened so long ago. My God, it's ancient history. I can't believe you're digging these bones up. Can't you let it rest? And that's how they go. That's how they do it. So there's not going to be a whole lot of shame. There's not going to be a whole lot of embarrassment. They're just going to keep on rolling the way that machine rolls. They blew a tire. They limped along for a little bit. They got some repairs overnight. The pit crew came in, put an inner tube in there, patched the tire up, and they're rolling. They're rolling again, and that won't ever change. That won't ever change. But it's an excellent example, of to what extremes these guys have gone and will go. We haven't seen it all yet. This show's just now getting cranked up. We haven't seen it all. But, to what extremes these guys are going to go to try to do anything they can. Any single teeny weeny woony little thing that they can do to try to delegitimize or marginalize or invalidate Donald Trump's presidency. And the media is just as enthusiastic about it as are the losing Democrats. this butt hurt is going to go on. It's going to go on. And there's no level of emollient that's going to soothe the hard left's diaper rash on this whole deal. It just isn't. It's just not. So you got to fight him again. And this goes back to something else I have said many times before. You see very clearly, we can't, you can't deal with them from a position of equal footing. You can only successfully deal with them from a position of superiority. You cannot deal with ISIS from an equal footing. You have to deal with them from a position of overwhelming force and superiority. You could not deal with Adolf Hitler and Nazi Germany. Prime Minister Hideki Tojo and Imperial Japan from an even footing, from equal footing. You had to deal with them from a position of superiority and overwhelming force. It's no different with these people, with the hard left. It's no different. It's the same kind of fight. And if we're not careful, it's going to be the same on many, many levels that we don't want to see it go to. So it's better to end it here and now. But that's what it is. And these are examples. And it's, there are no absolutes. There's no absolute wrong. There's no absolute right on the hard left. There can't be, because these are the kind of people whose moral fiber is such that they don't have a problem using whatever means necessary to accede to power. And if that includes violence and busting a few noses or cracking a few heads, maybe even burning some people up or, you know, whatever, they're not above employing it because it suits them at that time. That's what I talk about when I talk about this moral equivalency. The ends justify the means. Well, yeah, we had to be a little harsh there, but it was all in the name of creating this paradise for all of us where everything is shared 50-50. The Big Rock Candy Mountain. Brought to you by Uncle Samco, a subsidiary of World Stuff. I mean, that's what they want. That's their vision. It's all going to be given to you. It's all we're going. And so, if we got to kill some people, just think of it this way: that'll be more stuff for you when we finally take over. Vote Democrat. Revelatory knowledge. They're full of anthropogenic knowledge. They're full of the things that man knows and the business that man is about, whatever that may be, good or bad. They're well aware and they're fully cognizant of those things. Excuse me. But the revelatory knowledge that we possess, in addition to being conservatives, but also acknowledging and understanding and being aware of our Judeo-Christian faith and the revelatory knowledge provided to us by God through the Bible, that gives us something else, doesn't it? Once upon a time, you know, the science was settled that if you sailed far enough out to sea, eventually you would just fall off the edge of the earth. Why? Well, because the earth was fundamentally flat. The science was settled until men said, no, I don't think so. I think it's round, and here's what we're going to do. We got this thing called circumnavigation. And no, that's not something that they do to little boys when they're babies. No, it's circling the globe. Okay, that's what that is. And they did. They circled the globe. They went east far enough that eventually they were able to go west and vice versa. And so once upon a time, the science was settled that man would not fly. that there would be no cure for smallpox, that there would be no cure for measles or rubella or scarlet fever or any of the myriads of diseases that we've conquered. Man would not go to the moon. The science was for hundreds of years absolutely positively settled on that. But look what happened. Science never settles, even though they think it does. They say global warming. The science is settled. When we see instance after instance after instance after instance where science is never settled, because there are always things that we don't know. But they think they know it all, and that's how they like to play it. I think what we're going to do, I'm going to try right now to go to a break. And I think I'm going to be able to do it. I really do. I think I'm going to be able to do it. Anyway, we've got 90 minutes, so we've got a few more things to talk about coming up on the other side here. Oh, my gosh. What on earth is going on? The mouse is being a little hyper tonight and overly sensitive, so I'm all over the place right now, so it's hard to say what we're going to do. But like I said, look at all this stuff now. Look at what's going on now. Don't wait a week from now, because this is all going to be forgotten about, and there's not going to be any hint of any of this. It's like it never happened. But this is happening here and now, and we're going to take a little bit of a break. I will be back with more. We've got a whole other hour yet to go of ACP here on Blog Talk Radio through the studios of the Patriot Nation Radio Network. We'll be right back here in just a little bit.